Welcome back to another episode of Interviews with Experts. I'm your host, Michael Searles, and the topic for today is interviewing experts. Now, that's a bit strange, isn't it? The episode or the show is called Interviews with Experts, and we're interviewing an expert on interviewing experts. Well, if you can follow that, I'm going to introduce a fellow Australian to you who really has a big bank of experts that he's interviewed himself. He's got a show and a project that he has online called Podcast Interviews, and at that site, which we will talk about later, you can download free podcast interviews. And this fellow that I'm about to introduce to you has interviewed such big names, big name guests in the niche of internet marketing, search engine optimization, copywriting, and other areas, such as John Carlton, Ken Evoy, Michelle Fortin, James Schranko, Yarrow Starek, and Ed Dale, just to name a few. Now, we're talking about a guy who calls himself the complete entrepreneur, and I think with good reason too. I've actually positioned him in my mind as the Australian equivalent of Tim Ferriss. If ever you've read the best-selling book, The 4-Hour Workweek, you'll understand what I mean. And he's also works in the financial markets. This fellow has a diploma of financial markets from the Securities Institute of Australia. And I think without any further ado, I should introduce to you Dave Jennings. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for getting us on the line. And what a lovely introduction there. Much appreciated.
Oh, you're welcome, Dave. And I've been looking forward to this chat with you because you've got such a rich history of doing interviews with big names. And I've got so many questions that I know that our listeners would want to ask you, especially if our listeners have any interest themselves in doing social media or new media, interviewing people just like you do, Dave, and to find out and learn from you what you've done and how you got started. So before we come back and find out just a little bit about your own background, Dave, and answer the question, who is Dave Jennings, just answer this question for us. Let's dive in here. What is so good about interviewing big-named experts?
I think one of the best things that it can do for you is it really starts to position you as an expert in your niche. And that might sound a little bit counterintuitive in that you're interviewing experts. You'd think, well, obviously, I'm just interviewing the expert. I, therefore, am not an expert. But what you'll find is people start to associate those experts with you, and it makes you someone that sort of is positioned extremely well within your industry or whatever niche you're in as someone who's able to network and associate with some of these great names and leaders in the industry. So you'll find it starts off, you might interview some experts, but then over time what might start to happen is then you start to get other people contacting you. Now, just I think this is a great example, Michael, of you contacting me now and getting me to do an interview with you. So it's all just part of that journey to positioning yourself as an expert within your niche. So that's probably the biggest takeaway, but that's not to mention, you know, you get access to some of the thought leaders in your industry and get to ask them questions that you want to have answered. It's almost like you're getting private one-on-one coaching time with them where they might previously charge top dollar for, but you're helping them get their name and their brand out. So oftentimes you'll get that time and it's not going to cost you anything. So it's definitely got a few benefits there.
So Dave Jennings, interviewing experts can help position you, the interviewer, as an expert simply by the association of the types of people you're speaking with. Is that what you've just told us?
Yeah, yep.
Excellent. Well, all right, well, let's find out about Dave Jennings. What's your background? What have you been doing? What do you do today? And how did you get started interviewing big-named experts?
Well, I think it's been a little bit of a long entrepreneurial journey to get to where I am. And as you mentioned at the start, I consider myself the complete entrepreneur. And the reason I say that is I look at creating wealth through multiple streams of income. A little bit of that Robert Allen past coming out there, this idea of building wealth within real estate, within trading, and also within business as well. And For me, I first got started getting really interested in the stock market niche, and you touched on a few of the different areas that I was involved in, but I got started in the stock market niche. I saw a guy at school and he was making all of this cash while we were sitting in maths class, and I thought, oh, look, that's what I want to do. So at the end of my year 12, rather than go to university against the better advice of all my good friends and family, I took out a loan for $5,000 while I was working at a supermarket and went and did one of those weekend share trading courses. And that was sort of my introduction into the wealth creation sort of community. And I attended lots of seminars and just, tried to get as much knowledge as I could on the topic, just coming straight out of school, very keen to make my mark on the world. And after doing that for a little while, I realized, look, the stock market is fantastic, but for me, to get the most out of trading the stock market, you obviously need to have money to trade. And here I was working at a supermarket with a $5,000 loan, living at home with my mum. So I realized that as part of that wealth creation journey, the first step is to create cash flow. And with that in mind, a friend and I who had gone through a similar course realized that some people were struggling with a particular charting package in our stock market community. So we created an educational product to help educate people on how to get the most out of that package. Now, we went on to promote it and it did really well in our immediate community. And after that, though, I think we discovered you can have a fantastic product, but unless you get the word out, that product is never really going to see the light of day. So that's when I got interested in marketing. And as I mentioned, I got started in the whole wealth creation thing, I suppose focusing specifically on trading, but then we kind of went a little bit wider outside of that and started to look into, business as well, because I wanted to learn about marketing and promoting this product. So went down that avenue, went to a lot of different courses, and came across people like Brad Sugars, who he focuses on those three areas as well, real estate, trading, and business, and quite a few other courses as well, direct mail, people like your Jay Abrahams and your Dan Kennedys, and then that sort of shifted over to internet marketing. And then I started to promote our products on the internet using everything that I'd learned up until that point. I got a little bit frustrated though, because it's very easy when you're going and learning all of this great information. It feels like you're moving forward, but it just really, you're just chasing one pipe dream after the next. You hear about the next latest and greatest opportunity that appears in your inbox, and you jump onto the next big thing. And I got really frustrated because although I'd had some successes, because we had the product that we were creating and I definitely started selling that really, really well, I look back over once I came to the end of that phase and we'd purchased and built out over 500 domain names on a whole variety of different niches with varying levels of success. So I really, at that point, being all frustrated and feeling like I was jumping from one get-rich-quick scheme to the next, we looked over everything that we had done and got really clear on, what was the key element. And for us, it was getting traffic. We found once you've got a good product, once you get the real aim of the game is just to get that product in front of enough eyeballs, and then you'll make sales. So we started to really focus in on traffic, and we came up with a system for the way that we generate traffic to websites, and doing podcasts and things like that is definitely a component of that, plus SEO and a few other things as well. And we started to do extremely well in our niche, and from there it evolved. We really dominated online in some very competitive spaces, and chatted with my team, and we decided, look, there are a few changes in financial law here in Australia, and we shifted away from that stock market niche just because of certain licensing requirements, and we just didn't want to put ourselves in a situation where, potentially you could wake up and have your business taken away from you. So that's when we shifted and we set up our SEO company, effectively taking everything that we'd learnt up until now as far as marketing was concerned and driving traffic, and then started to offer that for small and medium-sized clients in our local area here in Melbourne, Australia. And very quickly we got some fantastic results because, you know, we were operating in very competitive spaces, and then to come to a much less competitive space when you're dealing with local markets, targeting geographic terms, we were just absolutely dominating and getting some really quick wins for our clients. And that, I think, really boosted us up to be a leading SEO company here in Australia. It wasn't our initial intention. It kind of just happened by the way that things were going. And I think we've used, you know, podcast interviews and a few little side projects like that to really position myself as the expert in that niche. And I think podcast interviews was a big driver of that.
Let me see if I've got the timeline of that, Dave. You've told us that way back you were working in a supermarket, so you were doing hands-on work to bring in a pay packet to meet the needs of the day. You took out a $5,000 loan so that you could study for a qualification and a better understanding of the financial and stock markets. You were exposed to some teachings of Brad Sugars, who, with those three elements that he teaches in trading, real estate and business, this brought you, or exposed you, to the names of big marketers in direct mail like Jay Abrahams and Dan Kennedy. And with the passing of time, you became successful in the stock market niche, but also became exposed to internet marketing and various elements of internet marketing, which included SEO. And you set up the Melbourne SEO service, which was still is a very successful business, and that's a big part of what you do today. But a part of the element of the internet marketing was the exposure to these bigger names, and you set up podcast interviews, and you said that podcasting is a marketing element for small business. And so this is how you, over time, built up this bank of talking to and then meeting, forming some kind of a relationship, and then interviewing these big names. Is that about right?
Yeah, yep. And I think the whole podcasting thing, there's so many different things that you can get from these interviews. Like, not only does it open that relationship up and potential business opportunities come out of that, then you've got all the content that's created from that. You know, we've taken these podcasts, we've obviously loaded them onto multiple sites. Like, I do it on podcastinterviews.com, I do it on my personal blog, davidjennings.com. We do some over at Melbourne SEO Services. We get them transcribed, we get them cut up into articles, and posted out those from those articles. We take those podcasts and we get slideshows put to them, so you've got a slideshow with the audio, match it together so it's effectively like a movie, then we upload snippets of that to our YouTube channel. So we really get a lot out of those interviews.
Let's then, Dave, talk to the listener right now who's never done an interview, never recorded an interview with someone who has a profile, a public profile, who may think that the whole exercise is a bit too daunting, or maybe even the listener thinks that they don't have any right to do an interview with a big named expert. What would you say to them, Dave?
Just that they're like any other person. They're just like you. They're wanting to get their brand out. They're wanting to get exposure. And if you're there to serve and there to help, all market leaders and things like that, they like to help spread their message, and they enjoy people who are going to help them spread that message. So just understand that if you've got a market, or if you've got some attention, or if you've just got some time where you can get out there and help promote them, then that's something that they're going to be very interested in. And not only that, they're clearly a leader in that niche, and that's why you want to speak to them. They oftentimes just enjoy talking about this topic. That's why they've fallen into it. So I think the real thing to take away there is I think you need to get a little bit less out of your, or get more out of your head, and coming up with reasons why you can't do it. And then come up, start thinking about reasons why you can do it and how you're going to end up helping the other person.
Oh, I like that. Get the reasons out of your head, the reasons why you're thinking and talking yourself into the reasons why you shouldn't or can't do it, and replace that headspace with all the reasons, and there's lots of them, all the reasons why you are just as entitled as anybody else to contact a big named expert and ask them for an interview. And there will always be your first interview. There was always your first interview. Dave, can you remember it?
Yeah, which I think we chatted about once before, where we had, it was Michelle Fortin, and you can still hear that one on podcastinterviews.com. That was, I was quite fortunate. I actually landed a really big name just for my first interview. So I was a little bit nervous the first time you do it, but as you get going, it's really just a conversation. Like I'm chatting with someone over the phone, and I just ask the questions that I would like to know the answers to, and I often find that that works best. What is it that I would enjoy listening to? And I use my questioning techniques and skills to draw that information out from the person I'm interviewing.
Well, you certainly did land a big name in Michelle Fortin. Of course, for the listener who may not have yet found Michelle Fortin. By the way, Michelle is French for Michael, so it's Michelle Fortin. He's a man, and he's a very well-positioned copywriter. He's made his mark online and offline as a copywriting master. And Dave, I've listened to that interview, and it is full of tips, and I highly recommend the listener to this interview with you, Dave Jennings, that that they hop across to your webpage, and one of them you said is podcastinterviews.com, and they'll find the link to the Michelle Fortin interview. And I suggest that you, the listener, that you do listen to that interview and listen to Dave and his interviewing style, because there's lots to be learnt from how Dave Jennings went about that first interview. So still talking about getting started, Dave, and for you, your first interview was with Michelle Fortin, and he's a big, very big name. A big-named expert online. So you said you had nerves. That's to be expected, and that's not unusual, and it's not to be fought, I wouldn't think. Do you think that someone should fight their nerves in interviewing?
No, I think it's just the same like with public speaking or anything where it's foreign. I mean, public speaking is a great example because a lot of people get extremely nervous before they do public speaking, and even you hear some of the great performers, they still say they get nervous even having done it hundreds and hundreds of times. So I think that's just natural. It's that age-old thing of feeling the fear and doing it anyway.
You mentioned also the technology part of it. I do just want to briefly touch on that without getting too involved, but there is technology. Obviously, there's technology involved in recording an interview, editing it if you need to, producing it, and then publishing it somewhere, in your case to your website, as well as iTunes and other web pages you own, Dave. You said you are doing your interviews just like a telephone call. So can you just sort of touch on briefly, again, without getting too involved, how involved are you personally in the technology side of your interviews, or do you outsource some of the tasks?
Certain tasks do. Obviously, I can't outsource the interviewing component, but as far as like technology is concerned, usually run it through a Mac or a PC, and I'll just run it through Skype like we are here. Depending on which computer I'm at, sometimes I might use, I've got a Blue Snowball mic, which gives you some good quality, but just for this interview right now, I'm just using a Logitech headset, and we're fine to get very good sound with that. So plug it in, USB, record through Skype. We use Call Recorder when I'm on a Mac, and Pretty May when I'm on a PC. Extract that call out as an MP3, and then I've got someone here in the office who then takes that audio and cleans it up. So they'll just, you know, put some music at the front, put some music at the end, name, you know, the ID tags and things like that. Then it just gets uploaded. We send it off to another assistant who transcribes it, and then that gets put into a document that's nicely formatted, and then it just gets uploaded to the site. So I think my guy who cleans the audio up just does it in Audacity, or might even be GarageBand. There's a few little free software. I think the real key is just not to get caught up in that technology. You don't need to make it any more difficult than it needs to be. Don't stress out if this is your first one. I would say if it's just your first one, there's nothing to say that you can't just do it with your Pretty May or call recorder over Skype and don't do any editing. Just do whatever you need to do to get it done and get it online, and then that will be the worst one that you ever do, and then over time you can slowly improve them.
That sounds like excellent advice you've given then, Dave, because what you've just mentioned to our listener is the important thing is to get started, whatever you have got to use, and not get too hung up, because you can search online for how to do media interviews or how to Skype interview and how to edit audio and video. If you do videos, this is an audio only interview that I'm conducting with you right now, Dave, but yes, you can get too caught up and too overwhelmed with what technology is available, and yet you can keep it really simple as you have done, and yet the quality and the output and the content, because isn't it, at the end of the day, isn't it all about the content that you're delivering as well?
Yeah, spot on. I think people will make exceptions for you if the quality's not quite right, if you're delivering fantastic content. So I'm a big one to try and avoid fluff where I can, particularly with the interviews that I do as well. Oftentimes I'll do a little bit of research about the interviewer before I start, so that way I give them a nice little intro like you did, and then that sort of helps reduce the amount of time that the person sits there and talks through their own story. But like, I mean, that's just my style. And then, like I said, I will ask questions because I'm a genuinely inquisitive person that I want to know the answer to. And I tend to avoid the really basic stuff. But again, that might depend on your target market. But sometimes I'll try and pitch it just a little bit higher and then, pre-assume that my listener has, reasonable intelligence. They don't have to be a rocket scientist, but they've also maybe gone through and the school of hard knocks and understand just the way things work, so I don't have to worry too much about the basics.
Dave, what you've also mentioned then, which is really encouraging, is to hear you say that this is all about meeting the need of the market, and you're telling us that in your case your interviews are pitched. You know who your target market is, and so you design your interviews and your questions for the appropriate needs and the mindset of who you know is likely to be listening to your interviews. And that's a good tip that you've given to our listeners between us right now, Dave, in that you've told our listeners here that they should have in mind who it is that they want listening to their interviews, and that would help them determine who they're going to interview and how they go about interviewing them and what the content is. Because that leads to the next question, Dave. How do you go about choosing who you're going to approach for an interview, and what's your process, if you have one, for actually contacting people and asking them?
Yep. So as far as who to interview, I think it's really important to just carve out your niche. Think about longer term, who are you, or which particular niche are you wanting to be an expert in? Once you know that, then it's a good idea to make sure that you're interviewing people in that space. There's no point in interviewing someone who's an expert at, underwater knitting or something like that, if you're wanting to position yourself as an expert when it comes to carpentry or something like that. Who knows? So make sure that you pick your niche, interview people within that niche. Once you've identified, maybe a list of 10 or 20 people that you put in your dream list, if you could interview anyone, write those people down on a spreadsheet and just go through a process of connecting with them and then asking them if you can help get them some exposure. So the way that I'll do that, usually the first email that gets sent through to the potential person that I want to interview is not even asking them about the interview or anything. I just want to make sure that I've come through to the right place. So the first email is always, "Hey, I'm wanting to get in touch with XYZ, insert person's name, and have I come through to the right place?" So that way I'm looking for a real short yes or no, and if they say no, obviously, okay, well, who do I need to chat with? And they'll probably forward you through to the correct person. The reason you want to do that is you don't want to scare someone off with a pitch right at the get-go of what it is that you're looking to do. And it helps open the dialogue by them saying yes. It's like, okay, yes, now I'm interested to hear what you've got to say. So that's when you follow up after that. And then you need to make sure that you're helping to serve them. These experts are busy. They've got plenty of things on the go that is occupying their time. Everybody's busy, and you're asking something of them, so you want to be respectful and mindful of that. So let them know, like I'll usually say something along the lines of, "Yeah, I just wanted to touch base because I've got this website, Podcast Interviews, where we interview industry leaders, and I've always been watching and following your work, and I would love to interview you so I can introduce you to my subscribers and followers and get you some exposure in my marketplace." So it's all about helping them. Like, you're not coming from a needy point of view, rather you're coming from a point of view of, I'm just helping you because I like your material." And that's a much better positioning for you to approach it in that way. So I'd just be logging that sort of info. Have a spreadsheet. You've sent the first email, you put a checkbox in, that, and then you can have a another column which follows up with that second email, and you have a checkbox, and that way you can keep up to date with exactly where you're at with it. And just make some little notes if you need to, if you didn't hear back. And then as far as like where to send it, there are a few different ways. You need to be respectful of the person. And you don't want to start hounding them, but I mean, think about different ways that you can get through to them, either through their their support system, or through their website. Often they'll have contact details, or maybe you engage with them in social media through Twitter or Facebook or something like that.
Well, to you, the listener, you've just had a pearl of wisdom given to you on a silver platter for absolutely nothing, bar the time you're investing in listening to Dave Jennings, an interviewer of experts. He's just shared with us his systematic approach on how he goes about asking and approaching, first of all, and asking experts, big high-profile names, for an interview. And the one thing he said, Dave, was that the first contact is not even a request for an interview. It's the contact, and it's beautiful. I'm going to use it myself. It's such a good approach, and that was your first contact is the email, introducing yourself, and then have I come through to the right place to speak to Mr. X or Ms. XYZ or whoever the person's name is, and then let the natural flow of conversation go from there. And the listener listening to Dave Jennings talk about interviewing experts, you should, can I encourage you to replay that part of this interview and take notes, because that was a systematic approach that you can use. It leads me to another question. Does everyone say yes at the end?
No, I've got a pretty good hit rate, and part of that is now having had a bank of successful interviews. And once you get going, you can then start to draw on it and say, "Hey, I have interviewed Rich Sheffrin, I've interviewed John Carlton, I've interviewed Ed Dale." And you mention a few of these names, and it's almost like you don't want them to miss out, and everybody else is doing it type thing. So that's ultimately where you want to get to. But in the early days, you get a lot of no's. The hit rate, like, I probably get more than 50% say yes. So the hit rate's not so bad that it's emotionally demoralizing. Like I said, most people want to help get that word out. So depending on the process and the way in which you go through it, if you go through it the way that I said, I think you'll get quite a good hit rate. But we get some no's sometimes. But I mean, that's fine. These are busy people. I'm asking something of them. and that's fine. You definitely don't want to hold any sort of grudge or anything like that. You just let it go, and it's just one more no gets you closer to the yes.
Well, Dave, if I hope this is not out of place to quote another two experts to confirm what you've just said. A man by the name of Alex Mandoshian, who teaches teleseminar skills, he suggests, which supports what you've said in the beginning, to aim for a strike of about 1 in 10. That is one yes for every 10 approaches. And another name that comes to mind is best-selling author Robert Ringer, who has one of his philosophies is the maintaining of a positive attitude through the expecting of a negative outcome, or he actually rewrote it to say realistic outcome. And so what that does is support what you've just said, Dave, is that in the beginning, you can expect that people that you approach will, for their own reasons and nothing personal against you, the reader, the listener, or if you are reading this interview, it's simply the way that realistic and life works that they will say no, but keep going because the numbers will increase to where Dave Jennings now has a strike rate of somewhere better than 50%, did you say, Dave? So, and also you mentioned that once you get a bank of names, you can, in your approach, in the systematic approach that Dave Jennings outlined to you, the listener, earlier on about, when you do get into the dialogue with the expert or their assistant, and sometimes you do deal with the assistant. Can I just cut in here and say, Dave, do you always deal directly with the expert in setting up the interview, or do you sometimes work with the expert's assistant?
Yeah, so it just depends on the size of the person. Like I can think of one assistant. Well, when I was contacting Yannick Silva and liaised with his assistant, who got us on the calendar and built up a rapport with her, ended up doing some work with her unrelated because she'd built up a business hiring out virtual assistants and things like that. So the moral of the story being, you never really know who it is that you're talking with, so you want to make sure that you always approach things nicely, courteously, and they might be the person, the gatekeeper, that could make or break you getting through. So regardless of who you're treating with, always treat them with the utmost respect.
Well, Dave, we're in the final moments of our time with you during this interview, and I've just got some final and concluding questions to finish off on, Dave. Just to ask you if you had, let's say, if you had three tips to give, three important things that someone should know about interviewing experts, getting started, what would those three things be, Dave? Sorry to put you on the spot.
No. So the three things, well, the first thing which I'd mentioned is making sure that you think upfront what it is that you're trying to achieve. Like, what's the purpose of these? You're not just doing interviews for the sake of the interviews. Once you've done that, I'd hone out what your niche is. So get really clear on that, and then that will help you develop that dream list of people that you'd like to interview. So that would probably be the first thing. The second thing would be make sure that you come from a very serving point of view. Like, make sure that you're helping the expert, making sure you're helping to get their name out. It's all about them, it's not about you. And then the final thing is make sure that you get as much out of the interviews as you can. So you want to try and think a little bit creatively. How can you repurpose the content? How can you use it as much as possible? How can you leverage off that to get, one of the things I did early on at the with some of my early interviews, at the end I would ask them, the people, who are people that you watch? Like, I'd say, who are the people in your industry that you keep an eye on, to make sure that you stay on the cutting edge. Now, they then list a whole bunch of names, and then thinking about leverage, what does that mean? I can now then approach them, those people that were mentioned in that interview, and I can say, hey, I just interviewed Rich Sheffrin, and at the end of the interview, he mentioned you as an expert, and I wanted to touch base and see if you'd be interested in an interview. And really just leveraging off that. So that's just a small idea, as far as getting the most out of what you can. and then try and keep those communication lines open. So once we've posted the interview back up on podcast interviews, then we can go back to the expert and say, hey, do you want to have a look at the site? You know, we've posted it over here. If there's anything that you want changed, let us know. And sometimes you'll get people who retweet out or post that information out to their subscribers. So it's just a chance for you to get that little bit of an extra push.
So those three things, know why you're wanting to do the interview, understand your purpose, and understand the market that you're wanting to publish and provide your content from the interview to. The second point, if I've got this right, is to maintain the professional, courteous approach and approach the expert from the service position and not a position of need, but you are providing a service to the expert. In other words, you're really providing a kind of a worldwide offer of promotion, aren't you, Dave?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
In a way. And then the third point you made was to bear in mind how you can repurpose and repurpose the content, because you mentioned that, and I mentioned in the intro, that your main site for publishing the interviews that you've done is podcastinterviews.com, but I know that your interviews are on an iTunes site and you've got them published elsewhere, and that's just audio, and you also have them published and available in various ways in print by having the audio transcribed into the written word on paper, don't you?
Yep, so it's just getting as much out of you can from what you've already got.
Well, there's some great tips from Dave Jennings, the man who today has an extensive bank of high-profiled names of experts in mostly internet marketing, copywriting, SEO, but entrepreneurship in general. Highly recommend that you do visit podcastinterviews.com. But also, Dave, just to finish off, because you're also very involved in SEO, your business Melbourne SEO services .com. You're involved in SEO. I wanted to ask a question totally unrelated to interviewing experts, but if I can just ask one question about SEO, because I'm interested, and that is SEO and optimizing and rendering a web page or a blog for mobile handheld devices. What's happening in that area, Dave?
Well, mobiles are growing significantly. Like, mobile computing is the next big wave, and we're seeing, obviously, with all of the smartphones coming out and the success of the iPhone. I think just recently, iPhone came out, I think in the last quarter, maybe they sold something like 20 million handsets, and we're talking a really, really, really big market there. And I think it's only going to get bigger as well as we head further into the future. So making sure that your website and your web properties play well on smartphones is definitely something worth looking at. So the real thing is, I mean, there's a whole different ways to do it. And if you're on a WordPress blog, you can get different plugins that are going to make sure that it's iPhone friendly and smartphone friendly, but I think the real key is just make sure you've probably got a smartphone. Just have a look at your website through these smartphones, and whenever you get the opportunity, and see how it looks, and just make sure that it's looking the best that it can on those devices, so that it's easily accessible for people using those platforms.
Well, just is it possible that the web, mobile access of the internet is going to be the web 3.0?
Very possible. I think when you think about the evolutions of the web, and everybody talked about this idea of web 2.0, and I think it was a little bit of a catchphrase at the time, just to say that, you know, the web is changing a little bit. But the idea of web 2.0 was all about social networking and community-based websites with user-generated content. Now, they had been around long before Web 2.0 was talked about, like, I mean, different forums and things like that. It was more kind of, you know, they started to see a wave of this, and then coined it Web 2.0. And similarly, like, I mean, there's been a few times after that where people are sort of coining this Web 3.0. I don't know if it's quite that phrase is quite stuck for mobile computing yet, but people are sort of starting to throw it around. So it'll be interesting to see if that's what it sticks at. But really, those next evolutions, it's all about big, significant changes in the way that people use the internet, which really, like, I mean, that does touch on mobiles. Mobile computing is a huge different wave. Like, I mean, we're going to see probably within our lifetime, probably even the next couple of years, we'll start to see a lot of money getting phased out. I think over in Singapore, they're looking at phasing out money and going completely digital. And, I mean, you'll be walking into your supermarket and instead of swiping your credit card, you'll just bump your mobile phone up against the cash register and they'll take the money out of your PayPal account. Like, I mean, that type of technology is just around the corner, and that's definitely, I suppose, Web 3.0.
It's so terribly exciting. And just to bring this back to your interviews at podcastinterviews.com, listeners, you can also use your handheld device, whatever it is, your mobile phone, your iPod, your smartphone, to access Dave Jennings' interviews with experts by clicking on the iTunes link, which is on podcastinterviews.com. You'll see it there on the right-hand side of the page under Find Us On. You can also subscribe via the RSS link and receive interviews that Dave publishes online and receive them via the RSS process as well. So, Dave Jennings, how can people contact you if they want to find out more about what you're doing and even if they wanted to contact you for commercial or business reasons?
Well, I suppose there are two main ways. If you just check out davidjennings.com, that's D-A-V-I-D, J-E-N-Y-N-S.com. That's my personal blog and links out to a lot of the different projects that I'm working on. And you'll also see there's a contact page as well. You click on there, it'll go through our support system and whether my team will be able to help answer your question, or if not, or if it's for me specifically, they'll assign it to me and we can get people the answers that they need that way. If you want to engage us in a more commercial capacity and perhaps look to get us working on your website or your web presence to make sure that you get found online, that's ultimately what we do here at Melbourne SEO, we get people found online, you can contact us through the melbourneseoservices.com and you can find out more about what we offer over there.
And that's melbourneseoservices.com?
Perfect. Yep, that's right. MelbourneSEO and then services.com.au.
MelbourneSEOServices.com, and that's for finding out more about Dave Jennings' business and helping you get found online, and that's what it's all about. If you have a presence online, if nobody's finding you, it ain't going to happen for you. And as far as just finding out more about Dave Jennings, his interviews with experts, and his other entrepreneurial interests, his blog is at davidjennings.com and there'll be a contact page there where you can send a contact request or an email through Dave's support team and communication will get underway that way. Well, listener, you have really been given some pearls of wisdom and some gems of suggestions from Dave Jennings. He is the expert. And he interviews experts, and from somewhat humble and, the common way we all start. We start by having a need, and there was Dave Jennings many years ago working in a supermarket, taking out a loan to improve himself and continuing education. He's come through the ranks, he's learnt through the school of hard knocks, as he referred to before, and now today, a highly successful businessman, a commercial interest in helping people get found online, helping businesses and commercial entities getting found online, and he's racking up this big list of interviews with big-named experts. Dave Jennings, on behalf of our listeners, can I thank you sincerely for joining us and sharing your story and helping our listeners learn how to interview an expert?
It's a pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity and appreciate being here. Thanks, Mike.
And to you, the listener, I hope you have enjoyed this interview, and make sure you keep an eye out for the next episode of Interviews with Experts, brought to you from Michael Searles. Thank you.